the ornate brass device out of his fob pocket. He held it to his ear, and was rewarded by the sound of loud ticking from the lovingly crafted mechanism within. He flicked the chronometer open and glanced at the face. It showed a little running skaven. Its feet moved back and forth every heartbeat. Its long tail pointed to the 13th hour, and so did the short stabbing sword it clutched. It was exactly 13 o'clock to the hour, to the minute. Heskett turned and gave the sign for the operation to begin. Felix looked at the outside of the new College of Engineering. It was a most impressive building, more like a fortress than any university college he had ever been in. The tall, broad towers at each corner would have been more at home on a castle than on a place of study. All the windows at ground level were barred. There was only one way in, through a massive archway, large enough for a horse-drawn carriage. A soft thud behind him told him that Gotrek had arrived, and most likely fallen into one of the flower beds. He heard the dwarf curse in his harsh, guttural tongue.
"Best be quiet," Felix whispered. "We really should not be here."
It was true. Only authorized members of the Guild of Engineers and Mechanics, their apprentices and members of the Imperial military were allowed into this highly secret place on pain of death, or at least a long stay in the dungeons of the Countess Emmanuel's infamous prison.
"The senses are all too drunk to notice anything, Madeline. It's a disgrace, but it's what you expect from humans."
Felix reached up and tugged his new cloak off the low wall. It was ripped where the broken glass and nails set on top of the wall had pierced it. Still, Felix thought sourly, better a ripped cloak than a ripped hand. He glanced over at the sentry boxes beside the locked iron gates and was forced to agree with Gotrek. It was a disgrace. One of the sentries was so drunk that he was simply lying asleep beside his post. Then Felix saw that there was something odd in the man's posture, and he stepped over cautiously to have a look. As he did so, he saw more recumbent figures. Was it possible that all of the sentries were drunk and asleep? He crept up for a closer look, then ripped his sword from its scabbard. The sentries were not drunk. They were dead. Each lay in a pool of blood. One of them still had a knife sticking from his back. Felix bent and examined it, and immediately recognized the workmanship from his own encounter with the skaven assassins at the Blind Pig.
"It looks like our friend was telling the truth," he said to Gotrek, who had joined him.
"Well, then let's go and take a look inside."
"I was afraid you were going to say that."
Heskett stalked the corridors of the college, surrounded by his bodyguards. In a way, this was a comforting place for him. He was surrounded by familiar things, forges and benches and lathes and braces, and all the tools familiar to engineers the world over, whatever their race. The smell of charcoal and metal wafted through the place on the night breeze. Skavens seethed through the corridors like an invading army, ransacking the place as they went. He hoped that his lackey, Squick-Squick, had managed to get into position in the central armories. Otherwise, all the choicest of loot would have vanished. To his right, he could see a rack of long muskets of a novel design. He immediately rushed over and pulled one down. It had the half-complete look of a new prototype. Its barrel was bound with copper wire, and a small telescope had been mounted above it. Nothing to get excited about, Heskett thought. Simply an inferior attempt at the Jezails his own bodyguard already carried. Without access to warpstone for their powder mixes, the humans would never be able to get the same range and hitting power. He hoped that the other stuff here was more worthy of his consideration, or it was going to be a wasted night.
"Most perspicuous of lords, this way," he heard Squick-Squick call.
Heskett strode down the long hall and found himself in another machine shop. This was more like it, he thought, when he saw the round, stubby mass of the organ gun. This was worth having. He strode over and ran his paws over the cold metal of one of the barrels. Yes, indeed, this was worth having. He looked down and saw the mechanism that would cause the barrels to rotate and the striker which ignited the fuses at the same time. Very clever. He wondered whether the tolerances of the metal could withstand the use of warpstone powder. Most likely not, But then again, some of those new lead warpstone alloys he had been experimenting with might just do the trick. He had not had any accidents with them since the last automated cannon had exploded and killed 10 of his assistants.
Quick, take it,
he instructed Squick. His lackey chittered a few commands, and a party of scryer slaves rushed forward. There was a slight squeaking as they wheeled the gun away. This did not bother Heskett. In fact, he found it quite relaxing. He pushed on deeper into the halls, wondering what new toys he would find in this strange and exciting place. Felix fumbled with the door handle. He had been half hoping to find it locked, but it was already open, and he suspected he knew why. There was a very familiar smell in the air, a combined scent of musk and wet fur and sewer reek. No doubt about it, the Skaven were here.
"Perhaps we should go and inform the Watch," he whispered to Gotrek.
"And tell them what? We just broke into your armory and discovered some Skaven there. We weren't trying to steal anything, honestly. We just wanted to look. Being hung as a thief is not my idea of a mighty doom, Manling."
"Then maybe we shouldn't have come here," Felix muttered.
He was already regretting that he had agreed to this harebrained scheme. In the heat of the moment, carried along by the momentum of events, it had seemed to possess a certain logic. But now he could see that it was nothing but pure madness. They were in a place where they had no business being, and most likely surrounded by fierce, Skaven warriors. By the time any help could get to them, they would in all probability be dead. And even in the unlikely event they survived until help came, their rescuers would, as Gotrek had suggested, most likely hang them as spies.
How did he get himself into these situations, Felix wondered.
"Are you going to stand there all night? Or are you going to open that door?"
Half expecting to feel a blade being thrust into his face, Felix slowly and cautiously pushed the door open. Ahead of him, a long corridor loomed. It was dark, save for the light that filtered in from outside. Felix wished that he had a lantern with him. There must be lights here, he thought. Then realized that all they would do was draw unwelcome attention. Gotrek pushed past and stomped off down the corridor, massive axe held ready to deal death. There was nothing for it but to follow him. Felix did not relish the prospect of being left in this vast and echoing building on his own.
"There is a problem, most decisive and responsible of leaders,"
Squick said quietly. Heskett turned and glared at his lieutenant petulantly.
"Problem? What problem could there be, Squick? Explain. Quick. Overseer Quee thinks that now he has seen the steam tank, there might be some problems. He thinks that the supports might not be strong enough to take the weight. It might be unwise to take it down into the sewers. Tell Overseer Quee to solve this problem quickly. Otherwise, he will have to be replaced by someone more competent. We must have this steam tank. We must study the engines. We must see how it works. Clan Scryer must possess this weapon."
Heskett clambered up on top of the steam tank. His followers had lit the place with the green glow of warpstone lamps, the better to see what they were doing. Just being on top of this mighty machine made Heskett's tail stiffen. He put his paws on his hips, struck a commanding posture, and looked down on the chamber. He looked around at this, the largest of halls, the place where steam tanks were built. It was impressive. All the parts, lovingly handcrafted, lay on workbenches nearby. Huge schematics had been pinned to a board on the wall for the guidance of apprentices. Overhead were all manner of pulleys and wires and guy ropes for luring all the pieces into place. It was a tangled and intricate enough web to cheer the heart of any Skaven. Nearby sat a partially assembled steam tank, looking for all the world like the half-devoured carcass of some leviathan. Above him were the galleries, from where the masters could survey the work of their labourers and see that everything was done properly. Yes, there were definitely some ideas here which could be adapted to the Skaven cause. Heskett turned back and was soon lost in contemplation of the huge mechanical monster, overwhelmed by the possibilities hinted at in its design. Truly, the steam tank was a most awesome concept. He ran a paw over the riveted metal and felt his heartbeat quicken. He could just see himself driving around in one of these. Only his would be bigger and better, with a warpstone-powered engine and a warp-fire thrower instead of a cannon. Bullets would ping off the armour of the hull. Arrows would be turned aside by the thickness of the walls. His foes would be crushed to bloody pulp under him. He would have a periscope to look out through, so he wouldn't have to expose his head to enemy fire. And he would have tracks instead of these silly wheels, so that he could pass over the roughest of terrain with ease. It was a design with which the Skaven could conquer the world. And he, Heskett One-Eye, would be responsible for it. Ahead, Felix could see a huge open courtyard. In the centre of the courtyard was a massive gaping pit, from which emerged the familiar stench of the sewers. The courtyard was lit by eerie flickering green lights. In their glow, Felix could see a horde of ratmen scampering backwards and forwards between the pit and the building proper. Each had a chest or a piece of machinery over his shoulder. It looked like they were looting the whole building. Felix wasn't sure what they were going to do. There were simply too many of the Skaven for them to overcome. Heskett clambered down into the steam tank and looked at the controls. There was a small seat moulded to fit a human driver, but the bulk of the chamber was taken up by a monstrous cannon and a huge boiler. Doubtless the boiler provided power. The controls were simplicity itself for a Skaven of Heskett's intelligence to figure out. This lever was forward, that lever was reverse. The whistle could be used to make terrifying noises and to relieve pressure on the boiler. This small wheel would let you guide the steam tank right and left, and this one would aim the cannon. It was all too easy. Suddenly, Heskett knew exactly what he wanted to do, and since he was a master warp engineer, there was no one here who could stop him. He was going to take this vehicle for a test drive, just to make sure it worked. It would also save all the effort of carrying it to the pit mouth and down into the sewers. He barked instructions to summon two slaves, and he soon had them loading up the boiler with wood. Within minutes, he had the engine under pressure and was ready to go. Heskett pulled the lever, and the steam tank lurched forward. In the distance, Felix heard a rumble like a dragon clearing its throat.
"Sounds like a monster," he whispered to Gotrick.
"Sounds like a steam engine, more like, Manling. We'd better investigate."
They hurried up the stairs and around the gallery above the courtyard. Here and there lay the bodies of sentries, killed by the same Skaven blades as they had encountered earlier. Felix flinched and kept his sword ready. At any moment he expected to run into a pack of fierce killers, like those which had attacked him and Alyssa in his room the other night. The sensation of speed and power was awesome. Heskett had never experienced anything like it. He felt like he could crush anything that got in his way, smash through any obstacle. With this one tank, he could overcome any foe. Visions of huge armies, spearheaded by warpstone-powered steam tanks, danced through his head. With such a force, manned by fierce Skaven warriors, Clan Scryer could conquer the world. And of course, he, Heskett One-Eye, would be suitably rewarded for his genius in coming up with the plan. He would see to that. Heskett looked up to see where he was going. What was that foolish poison-winged Globadier doing, standing in front of him with a look of panic on his face, Heskett wondered. Felix emerged onto a gallery above a huge hall which seethed with Skaven. In the middle of the hall stood a gleaming new steam tank. Smoke billowed from its chimneys, and even as he watched, Felix saw that the vehicle was starting to move. It picked up speed fast and ran over a small Skaven who stood clutching something in front of it. The Skaven fell, and something like a glass sphere rolled from its hands. The sphere fell and shattered into a million pieces. As it did so, a horrible cloud of greenish gas emerged. All of the ratmen down below who were caught in the cloud clutched their throats and fell, coughing blood. They lay on the floor, tails lashing, feet kicking the ground. In a way, they looked as if they were drowning. He remembered Gotrick's tales of Skaven gas weapons. He remembered that awful moment during his fight with the Skaven in the sewers when he thought he had been gassed. He also remembered that the Slayer had suggested the solution was a handkerchief soaked in piss and placed over your mouth. He currently didn't have the time or the inclination to test that theory. Felix noticed gratefully that the gas appeared to be heavier than the surrounding air and did not rise far. Indeed, it was already starting to disperse. Was he dying? Heskett wondered. Or had he managed to hold his breath in time? He did not know. His eyes watered from the gas which had seeped in through the open hatch. The two Skaven slaves lay gurgling and gasping in front of him. Heskett knew he did not feel any pain. Perhaps the heartbeat of warning he had got when he saw the Globedir had been enough. He'd just enough time to snatch a lungful of air and hold his breath. He had certainly not wasted it on shouting a warning to the others. As a consequence of his own quick thinking, he had managed to save himself. Heskett peered out through the green murk with watering eyes and tried to guide the tank into the clear. Something bumped and squished under the wheels, and he thought he heard a howl of agony. He ignored it and concentrated on staying alive. That was the most important thing. His lungs felt like they were bursting. His heart beat at three times its usual rate. He had already squirted the musk of fear and soiled his fine armour. He did not care. All that mattered now was that he did not breathe until he saw clear air, and that he kept himself alive, in spite of the treacherous attack of the foolish Globedir. All around him he heard sounds of confusion, of Skaven shouting orders, of barked commands, and weapons being brought to bear.
"We're under attack!"
he heard Squick Squick shout. It wasn't until the Jezael shots started thumping on the side of the tank that he realised that the idiots thought that he was attacking them. Felix watched in mounting confusion at the scene of carnage. The gas had killed dozens of the Skaven. The rest of the ratmen had turned on the steam tank. Several teams of Skaven, equipped with long rifles, had started taking pot shots at the tank. Two weirdly equipped Skaven were manhandling a huge and very unwieldy-looking weapon into a position where it could fire at the tank. Was there still a human alive down there? And had he somehow managed to get the war engine to work? Was he even now fighting for his life and in desperate need of help? Felix turned to consult with the Slayer, and only then realised that Gotrek had gone. Felix could guess where. The Skaven had manoeuvred their odd-looking weapon into position. One of them crouched down with a barrel braced on its back, the other wielding the connected gun. Suddenly, a jet of greenish flame gouted forth and sprayed towards the tank. It clung to the metallic side panels, burning intensely, the flare illuminating the whole chamber and making Felix stand out in stark relief on the balcony. He knew this because a whole group of Skaven were suddenly pointing at him and chittering. He had a terrible feeling that he knew what was going to happen next. Heskett closed his eyes and hoped that he would still be able to see when he opened them. The heat was intense, and the warp flames of the fire thrower licked through the viewing slit of the steam tank. Heskett screamed and squirted the musk of fear again, soiling the seat below him.
"Stop, stop, fools!" he shrieked. "It is I, Heskett, your leader!"
If anyone heard him over the roar of the steam tank, they gave no sign. All was confusion and madness. It was possible that his ratkin had lost sight of him in the confusion and thought he was a human attacker. It was equally possible that some vilely ambitious underling knew full well that he was in here and was taking this opportunity to try and assassinate his superior. In fact, the more Heskett thought of this second option, the more likely it seemed to him. Those fire-thrower bearers, for example, were not stopping their assault despite his express command. They might claim they could not hear him over the roar of the engine, but Heskett knew better. He could see it all so clearly now. It was all part of a devilish plot to remove him from his rightful office. He would not be in the least bit surprised if Greyseer Thankwell was behind the whole thing. Filled with righteous vindictive anger, Heskett bared his fangs in rage and steered the steam tank directly at the warp fire throwers. Too late. The treacherous vermin realised their peril and attempted to scuttle aside. Heskett was rewarded by the crunch of their bones under his wheels. Then there was a hideous crump as the barrel of phosphorescent chemicals exploded. Felix was trapped. Skaven were flowing out onto the balcony on which he stood in a grim, furry tide. There were dozens of them, far more than he could fight. He did not doubt that he could take out one or two of them on the narrow walkway, but while he was doing so, Others would come rushing up behind him and drive their nasty little blades into his back. Damn Gotrek! Where was the Slayer when he was needed? As if in answer to his unspoken query, he heard a thunderous bellow from below him. Risking a quick glance, Felix saw that the Slayer had emerged into the room below, leaving a trail of dead and dying ratmen behind him. A dripping wet rag was wrapped round his face. Evidently the Slayer was taking no chances of being gassed before he achieved his heroic death. Also below him, Felix could see the steam tank as it careened onward. Blazing green flames raged around its wheels and along its belly. It bumped and bounced through the workspace, leaving a comet trail behind it, crushing everything that got in its way. Then it slewed around, coming almost to a stop, its front end facing in the direction of the Slayer. Gotrek stood his ground, confronting the massive machine, for all the world like an Estalian matador facing a bull. All around the dwarf, panicked Skaven scuttled for cover. That was all that Felix had time to see, as the seething mass of Skaven bore down on him. He knew that if he stayed where he was dead. Seeing nothing else for it, he scabbarded at his sword, leapt up onto the banister, and reached up to grab one of the overhead lines. Swiftly, he swung himself hand over hand until he was out over the middle of the courtyard. Felix hung there for a moment, getting his breath back. Suddenly, he felt the line begin to falter under his weight. He risked a glance backwards and saw an evilly grinning Skaven sawing at the rope with his blade. Oh no, thought Felix, as the line gave way with a snap. Heskett could not believe his eyes. Was that a dwarf standing in front of him, brandishing a huge axe? How could there be a dwarf here, in the middle of this man-burrow? Had he accidentally taken a whiff of the Globedeer's gas? Was he hallucinating? The whole tank was getting warm, and not just from the boiler. Heskett was certain he could smell warp fire burning somewhere. And where had all his lackeys gone? Surely the dwarf and the gas could not have killed them all. Well, one thing was certain. No dwarf could survive a face-to-face encounter with this steam tank. Heskett upped the acceleration and raced directly at Gotrek. The line parted and Felix arced down towards the ground. He saw that Gotrek was almost directly below him and that the steam tank was almost upon him. It looked like the Slayer was about to be crushed to a bloody pulp beneath the wheels of the blazing steam tank, but at the last second he stepped to one side and his axe struck the side of the vehicle with a deep resonant clang like the tolling of a great bell. Felix braced himself for a painful impact with the ground. Then, at the last second, he realized that the arc of his trajectory was taking him directly into the path of the steam tank. It seemed all too likely that he was going to end up beneath its wheels. Heskett's head ached from the fumes and from the great ringing echo inside the tank. And what had that second bump been against the tank's side? He was beginning to regret that he had ever allowed his lackeys to persuade him to get into this accursed death trap. Heads would roll once he brought the thing to a stop, that was certain. He tugged hard on the braking lever, and it came away in his hands. Ahead of him, the wall of the building loomed. It approached with appalling speed. All the breath was knocked out of Felix's lungs as he slammed into the top of the steam tank. He felt himself start to slip. He could feel the heat beginning to scorch the soles of his boots. He reached out and grabbed for something to hold onto. His fingers caught the edge of the open hatch. Using the leverage this gave him, he pulled himself up and crouched on top of the speeding tank. He could see the wall approaching quickly. He tried to throw himself clear, but it was too late. The force of the impact sent him tumbling headfirst through the hatch and down into the interior of the burning steam tank. There was a huge roar and a grinding sound as the steam tank went right through the brick wall. The whole tank shook, and the smell of burning intensified. Suddenly, a heavy weight dropped on Heskett, and he found human hands scrabbling against his fur. Felix flinched as the Skaven bared huge jaws full of needle-sharp teeth and snapped at him. Oh, this was a nightmare, thought Felix. He was trapped, hanging upside down in a tiny enclosed space aboard a speeding vehicle with a hideous mutant monster trying to tear out his throat. He pulled his head aside and lashed out with a fist, catching the Skaven on the snout. All around he noticed that steam had started to billow and sparks had started to fly from the boiler. The Skaven lashed out at him. Razor-sharp claws tore his cheek. Felix had a moment to be glad that the space was too confined for the Skaven to use its weapons. He let himself drop the whole way into the cabin and landed with his full weight on the Ratman. The two of them grappled and rolled around the cabin, hitting the control levers and sending the steam tank skidding uncontrollably, first left and then right. Through the viewing slit, Felix caught sight of terrified Skaven running for cover. The steam engine was making weird snorting sounds. The heat and humidity were appalling. It was a ferocious brawl. Felix was much bigger and heavier, but the Skaven had a horrible, wiry strength and the advantage of possessing long, sharp teeth. Pain flared through Felix as it sank them into his shoulder. He felt hot blood as it spurted through his shirt. With the pain and fear came a terrible anger.
Right! That's it!
Felix spat, getting his hands around the Skaven's throat and starting to squeeze. At the same time, he shoved the Skaven's head away from him and started to smash it into the side of the steam tank. This was not a good night, Heskett One-Eye thought, as the maniacal human bashed his head against the steel wall for the third time. The Skaven could feel the strength draining out of him. There was no air in his lungs and no way to breathe with those iron-strong human hands around his throat. It was like being stuck in the gas once more, only 100 times worse. If only he hadn't been betrayed by his worthless underlings, this would never have happened. Over his attacker's shoulder, through the viewing slit, Heskett could see the open mouth of the pit leading down into the sewers. A mass of Skaven were diving into it, fleeing from the scene of the battle. The steam tank, too, was heading right for it. Felix had an awful sinking sensation in the pit of his stomach as the steam tank lurched and tumbled. They must have hit an obstruction or fallen into a pit, he thought, as he was thrown about the cabin. This is it, he thought. I'm going to die. Suddenly the steam tank came to rest with a horrid gurgling splash, and the familiar stink of the sewers filled Felix's nostrils. His grip on the Skaven's throat loosened, and the thing took the opportunity to break free. It scampered up and out of the hatch like a ferret up a drainpipe. Judging by the flames coming from the boiler, Felix thought he'd better do the same. Painfully, he reached up and pulled his battered frame up through the open hatch. He stood, perched on top of the steam tank for a moment, glaring at the Skaven he had just fought. As he had thought, the vehicle had fallen through the pit the Skaven had dug in the courtyard and was now sinking into the sewers. Smoke and steam and flames flickered through the hatch below him, scorching his boots and setting his trousers to smouldering. The whole steam tank bucked and shuddered in the mire. All around him, Felix could see a host of red eyes glittering in the dark. He was surrounded by Skaven. Out of the frying pan into the fire, he thought. Where had all these warriors come from? Heskett wondered dazedly. They should be up above fighting with the dwarf and his human ally, not cowering down here away from the fight. Not that it mattered right at this very moment. As a highly skilled warp engineer, Heskett recognized all the signs of a very serious malfunction in the steam tank. He did not doubt that he had mere moments to get clear before it exploded. Fear lent his feet wings. He sprang out into the tightly packed mass of Skaven. Before they could react, he skittered across their shoulders, trampling on their heads as he went. Even so, he knew that he was not going to get clear in time. There was only one thing for it. Holding his snout, Heskett dived headlong into the sewer. Judging by the speed with which the terrified Skaven took off over the heads of its fellows, Felix knew that something terrible was about to happen. He had to act, right now. He sprang upwards, grabbed the lip of the pit, and pulled himself clear, just as the mass of Skaven swarmed forward over the steam tank. He felt claws rip the leg of his breeches as one of the pack leaders made a grab for him. Frantically, he kicked out with his other foot and felt something break as his boot connected with teeth. Looking out into the greenly lit courtyard, he saw the Slayer jogging towards him. Felix pulled himself upright and raced for the dwarf, shouting, "Get down! It's going to ex—" Behind him there was an enormous, thunderous roar and a mighty flash like a lightning strike. A huge cloud of stinking smoke billowed forth. The shockwave threw Felix onto the ground hard. He was vaguely aware of a number of Skaven forms tumbling headlong through the gloom around him. Then his head smacked into the ground, and consciousness left him. When Felix pulled himself upright, Gotrek was standing nearby, peering down into the mouth of the pit. All around them were hideously mangled, skaven corpses. Felix could not guess whether they were the products of the explosion or Gotrek's efforts. Not that it mattered. The result was the same in the end. Behind him there was a sudden mighty crash. Felix looked back to see that the whole wall of the college had collapsed. Indeed, peculiar greenish flames were lapping through the entire building. Something told him that no amount of effort by firefighters was going to extinguish that blaze until its sorcerous fury was spent. He turned to look back at the Slayer, noticing for the first time the huge splashes of blood which painted the dwarf's body and dripped from his axe. Gotrek grinned and showed his missing teeth.
"Got most of them. The rest ran away," he said in disgust. "They seemed to lose heart after I killed the first 50.
"Yes, but at what a price! We burned the college to the ground! Think of all that knowledge lost!"
"Colleges can be rebuilt, Manling."
The Slayer tapped his head with one brawny finger.
"Knowledge is in here. The masters and apprentices survived. Things will go on."
"We'd better go on and get out of here. The guard'll be coming soon."
Wearily, they made their departure. Somewhere in the distance, the alarm bells were already tolling. Heskett raised his head above the brown, sludgy mass and spat out a mouthful of rank sewer water. That had been too close for comfort, he thought. Only the fact that the jelly-like consistency of this part of the flow had absorbed the shock of the blast had enabled him to survive, he was sure. It looked like all the others were dead. Still, he was alive, that was the main thing, he thought, as he padded along through the water with strokes of his paws and lashes of his tail. Now all he had to do was find an explanation for this fiasco, which the cursed Grey Seer would accept, because somehow he was sure that Thankwell would know all about this night's work. Chapter 4. Plague Monks of Pestilens. Having shed some light on the disaster which befell the College of Engineering in that accursed year, I feel that I can move on to cover another topic. It was during this period of my life that I acquired more knowledge of the foul breed of ratmen known as Skaven than I ever wished or deemed advisable. Even the possession of such knowledge as I had would have been considered cause enough for burning at the stake by our more fanatically dedicated witch-hunters. I've often thought that if such people showed half the zeal in persecuting the real enemies of our society as they do in pursuing innocent scholars, our world would be a safer and happier place. Of course, the real enemies of our society are a far more dangerous breed than innocent scholars, and have allies in far higher places. I leave my readers to draw their own conclusions from that. From My Travels with Gotrek, Volume 3, by Herr Felix Jaeger, Altdorf Press, 2505. The man clutched his throat, gave a gurgling moan and keeled over, froth pouring from his lips, vile green stuff oozing from his nostrils. He lay on his back in a midden heap and frantically beat the muddy pavement with his fists. Then all the strength seemed to leave him. His limbs twitched feebly in a final spasm of motion. Then he gave a last long groan and lay still. The people in the street all around looked at each other in fright, then raced away from the body as fast as they could. Beggars crawled away from their resting places. The one-legged man hopped away, almost dropping his crutch in his haste. Peddlers abandoned their stalls. Goodwives ducked back into their buildings and locked their doors. Rich merchants urged their palanquin bearers to greater speed. Within moments, the street was all but deserted. Throughout the hubbub of the departing crowd ran one word: plague. Felix Jaeger glanced around the suddenly empty street. It didn't look like anyone else was going to help the poor devil, so it seemed the job fell to him. He covered his mouth with his tattered cloak and knelt beside the body. He laid a hand on the man's chest, searching for a heartbeat. It was too late. The man was beyond any help. He was dead. Felix had enough experience of death to know.
"Felix! Come away, I'm frightened!"
Felix looked up. Alyssa stood nearby, her face pale and her eyes wide. She ran a hand through her curly black hair, then brought it back to her mouth.
"Nothing to be frightened of," Felix said. "The man is dead."
"It's what killed him that scares me. It looks like he died of the new plague."
Felix stood up, superstitious fear filling his mind. For the first time, he was forced to consider the death he had just witnessed and the reason why everyone else had fled. Plagues were terrible things. They could strike anywhere, kill anyone, rich or poor. No one knew what caused them. Some said the dark influence of chaos. Some said they were the wrath of the gods on sinful humanity. The only certainty with plague was that there was very little that you could do to save yourself once you caught it, save prey. Such virulent diseases could baffle the best of physicians and the most potent of mages. Felix stepped away from the body quickly and moved to put his arm around Alyssa reassuringly. She shied away, as if he carried the contagion.
"I don't have the plague," he said, hurt.
"You never know."
Felix glanced down at the body and shivered.
"It certainly wasn't that poor soul's lucky day,"
Alyssa said.
"What do you mean?"
"Take a look. There's a black rose on his tunic. He'd just been to a funeral."
"Well, now he's going to his own," Felix said softly.
"That's the fourth death today from the plague that I've heard of,"
Hines said when Felix told him the news.
"The lads in the bar are talking about nothing else. They've a sweepstake going on how many it will be by nightfall."
In a way, Felix was glad of this news. For the past few days, the citizens had talked of nothing but the burning down of the College of Engineering. Most claimed it was sabotage perpetrated by Chaos Worshippers or the Bretonians. Felix continually felt spasms of guilt as he was reminded of his own participation in the event.
"What do you think?" Felix asked, looking around at how many people were present. The bar was packed to capacity, and the inevitable jostling was already causing friction.
Felix felt certain there would be trouble this evening.
"I put my money on it being 10. Last year, when the red pox came, there were 20 people gone by noon. But then, the red pox was a nasty one. Worst in 20 years. Still, you never know. This one might be worse before it's done."
"I meant, what do you think caused it?" Felix said. "How do you think it spreads?"
"Oh, I'm not a physician, Felix. I'm a bartender. I guess that it's spread by tinkers and witches. That's what my old wife Lottie used to say."
"Do you think I could have caught it from that poor man?"
"Maybe. I wouldn't worry. When old man Moore pulls your name out of his big black hat, there's nothing you can do about it. That's what I think. One thing's for sure, though."
"What's that?"
"It's good for business. Soon as plague comes, people hit the taverns. They want to forget about it as quick as they can."
"Maybe they want to die drunk."
"Well, there's worse ways to die, young Felix."
"That there is."
"Well, you better get over there and stop those Tillians drawing knives on each other, or we'll soon have a graphic demonstration of just that."
"I'll deal with it."
Felix moved to hastily intervene in the dispute. In a few seconds, he had far more immediate dangers to worry about than catching the plague.
"So you're not worried about the plague?" Felix said, ducking a swing from a drunken mercenary.
"Never catch the things, Madling,"
Gotrek Gurnison replied, grabbing the mercenary's ear, pulling his head down level with the dwarf's own, and then dropping the man with a headbutt which sent blood from the man's bleeding nose, spraying outwards to add a new and brighter tint to the slayer's great crest of red-dyed hair.
"Been right through a dozen sieges. Humans drop like flies. That was fine. Dwarves don't usually get the plague. We leave that to less hardy races like elves and men."
Felix caught two of the mercenaries' squabbling comrades by the scruffs of their necks and hauled them upright. Gotrek grabbed one, Felix grabbed the other, and they ran them out through the swinging doors into the muddy streets.
"The worst thing I've ever had was a bad hangover," Gotrek said. "And don't come back!"
he bellowed out into the street. Felix turned to survey the bar. As Hines had predicted, it was full. Slumming nobles mingled with half the cutthroats and rake-hells of the city. A big gang of mercenaries, fresh in from the Middenheim caravan route, were spending their money like there was going to be no tomorrow. Maybe they were right, Felix thought. Maybe there wouldn't be a tomorrow. Maybe all the street corner seers were right. Maybe the end of the world was coming. Certainly the world had ended today as far as that man who had died in the street was concerned. In the far corner he could see that Alyssa was talking to a brawny young man, garbed in the rough tunic and leggings of a peasant. Their conversation became animated for a moment. Then Alyssa turned to leave. As she did so, the youth reached out and grabbed her wrist. Felix began to move over to intervene. Being poured was an occupational hazard for the serving wenches, but he didn't like it happening to Alyssa. She turned and said something to the youth. His hand opened and he let go immediately, a look of something like shock on his face. Alyssa left him there, his mouth hanging open and a pained look in his eyes. Alyssa hurried past, chin up, carrying a tray full of empty tankards. Felix caught her by the arm, turned her around, kissed her cheek.
"I don't have the plague," he said,
but she still wriggled away. Felix could hear the word plague being discussed at every table. It was as if there were no other topic of conversation in the whole blasted city.
"Really, I don't," Felix added softly.
He turned around and noticed that the youth who had been talking to Alyssa was staring at him with a look of anger in his eyes. Felix was tempted to go over and talk to him, but before he could, the young peasant got up and stalked none too steadily to the door.
"I know you don't have the plague," Alyssa said,
snuggling closer to Felix on the pallet they shared. She picked up a piece of straw which had burst out of the hole in the mattress and began to tickle him under the nose with it.
"You don't have to keep telling me. Really, I wish you'd just shut up about it."
"Maybe I'm trying to reassure myself," he said, grabbing her wrist and immobilizing her hand. He reached over with his other hand and began to tickle her.
"Who was that you were talking to earlier?"
he asked.
"When?"
"Down in the bar. A young man. Looks straight off the farm."
"Oh, you saw him then?"
she asked, her voice all feigned innocence. "Apparently so."
"That was Hans."
"And who is Hans?" Felix said levelly.
"He's just a friend."
"He didn't seem to think so, judging by the look he gave me."
"We used to go out together back in my village, but he was very jealous, and he had a terrible temper."
"He hit you?"
"No, he hit any man who looked at me in what he thought was the wrong way. The village elders got fed up with it and put him in the stocks. After that, he ran away to the city to look for his fortune, he said."
"Is that why you came here? To find him?"
"Maybe. It was a long time ago, and Norn's a big place. I never saw him again until tonight, when he came into the pig. He hasn't changed much."
"You were close?"
"Once."
"Not now?"
"No."
Alyssa looked at him seriously.
"You ask a lot of questions, Felix Jaeger."
"Then stop me asking," he said, and began to kiss her hungrily. But in his mind, he was still wondering about Alyssa and Hans and what had gone on between them. Gracia Thankwell helped himself to another pinch of warpstone snuff. The brain-blastingly potent drug sent a charge of pure energy through his body, and his tail stiffened in ecstatic joy. He basked in the warm glow of triumph. His intricately woven scheme had succeeded, and his rival Heskett One-Eye's plan to seize all of the technological secrets of the Human College of Engineering had been thwarted. Thankwell bared his fangs in a death's head grin when he considered Heskett's discomfiture. He had made the proud warp engineer grovel in the dirt before his whole army while he explained what he had been doing. He had berated Heskett for almost jeopardizing the whole glorious campaign to assault Nuln by his ill-considered actions, and sent him slinking off with his tail between his legs. Now Heskett had retired to his chambers to sulk, while he waited for reinforcements to arrive from Skavenblight to replace the warriors he had lost on the surface. With any luck, no new warriors would come. Heskett might even be recalled to Skavenblight to explain his actions to his superiors. Perhaps, Thankwell thought, with a word in the right ear, this course of action could be encouraged. The curtain which separated Thankwell's private burrow from the rest of the underways was wrenched open, and a small Skaven entered the chamber. Reflexively, Thankwell sprang back behind his throne. The eerie glow of dark magic surrounded his paw as he summoned the energy to blast the interloper to atoms. But then he saw that it was only Lurk Snitchtongue, and he stayed his spell for a moment.
Grave news, most potent of potentates,
Lurk chittered, then fell silent as he noticed the aura of magic which surrounded the grey seer.
No, no, most merciful of masters, don't kill me! Don't, don't! Never, on pain of death most excruciating, ever burst into my chamber unannounced again,
Thankful said, not relaxing his vigilance for a moment. After all, you could never tell when an assassination attempt might happen. Jealous rivals were everywhere.
Yes, yes, most perceptive of seers. Never again should it happen. Only... Only what? Only I bring most important tidings, great one. What would those be? I have heard rumours. Rumours! Do not barge into my sacred chambers and talk to me about rumours! Rumours from a usually reliable source, greatest of authorities.
Thankful nodded. That was different. Over the past few days, Thankful had come to have a certain respect for Lurk's host of informants. The little Skaven had a talent for ferreting out information that rivaled even Thankful's. Almost.
Go on. Speak, speak. Waste not my precious time. Yes, yes. I have heard rumours that Vilebroth Null and his chief acolytes have left the Underways and went surfacewards to the man's city of Nuln, there to establish a secret burrow.
What could the Clan Pestilens abbot be up to, thought Thankful, his mind reeling. What did this signify? It inevitably meant some sort of treachery to the sacred Skaven cause, some scheme to grab the glory that was rightfully Thankful's.
Go on. It may be that they took with them the cauldron of 1,000 poxes. Oh, no,
thought Thankful. The cauldron was one of the most hideously powerful artifacts that Clan Pestilens was thought to possess. Since early runthood, Thankful had heard dire tales of its powers. It was said to be the means of infallibly brewing terrible diseases, an artifact stolen from a temple of the plague god Nurgle, back when the world was young, and reconsecrated to the service of the horned rat. If the cauldron was on the surface somewhere, that could only mean Vilebroth Null meant to start a plague among the humans. Under normal circumstances, Thankful would have been only too pleased by such an eventuality, just as long as he was 1,000 leagues away. Clan Pestilens' plagues had a habit of running out of control, of afflicting Skaven as well as their intended victims. Only the plague monks themselves seemed immune. Many seemingly assured Skaven triumphs had been undermined by just this occurrence. Now Clan Pestilens were only supposed to unleash their creations by special authorization of the Council of 13. The last thing Thankful wanted at this moment was his army destroyed by a runaway plague. He considered the implications still more. Of course, the council did not argue with success. Perhaps the plague might succeed in weakening the humans without afflicting the Skaven horde. But if it succeeded, the Council of 13 might extend its favour to Vilebroth Null and withdraw its patronage from Thankful. Null might even be rewarded with the leadership of the invasion force. Thankful considered. What else could be going on here? If the scheme was an honest effort to help the invasion, why had Thankful not been informed? He, after all, was supreme commander. No, this had to be some sinister scheme of Null's to seize power. Something would have to be done about this treachery and this blatant defiance of the Council of 13's edicts. Then another thought struck Thankful. His agents on the surface had already reported tales of some new and dreadful disease spreading among the human burrows. Undoubtedly, Vilebroth Null had already begun to implement his wicked plan. There was no time to waste.
Quick, quick! Where did those treacherous vermin go? I know not, most lordly of lords. My agents could not say. Run, quick, quick! Scuttle off and find out. At once, most decisive of leaders. Wait, wait. Before you go, bring me parchment and pen. I have an idea. You sneezed,
Alyssa said. Did not, Felix said, well aware that he was lying. His eyes felt puffy and his nose was dripping. He was sweating a little too. And was that the first faint tickle of a sore throat he felt? Elissa began to cough, hackingly. She covered her mouth with one hand, but her whole body shook. "You coughed," Felix said, and wished that he had not. Tears had started to appear in the corner of the girl's eyes.
"Oh, Felix," she said. "Do you think we have the plague?"
"No, absolutely not," Felix replied.
But in his heart of hearts, he was far from certain. Cold dread clutched at him.
"Get dressed," he said. "We'll go and see a physician."
The doctor was a busy man today. That much was obvious, thought Felix. There had been a queue stretching halfway around the block from his small and dingy office. It seemed like half the city was there, coughing and wheezing and hawking and spitting into the street. There was an air of barely suppressed panic. Once or twice, Felix had seen people come to blows. This was useless, Felix decided. They would never see a physician today under these conditions, and the aisles of the Temple of Shalya were full of supplicants. There had to be a better way.
"Come on, I have an idea,"
he said, grabbing Elissa by her hand and pulling her from the queue.
"No, Felix, I want to see the doctor."
"You will. Don't worry."
"Felix, what are you doing here?"
Otto did not look pleased. In fact, he had not looked pleased since Felix had refused his offer of returning to the family business and instead started work in the Blind Pig. Felix looked at his brother keenly. Otto was dressed particularly richly today, in a gown of purple brocade trimmed with ermine, and Felix felt his own ragged appearance keenly. It had taken him nearly 10 minutes to convince the clerks to let him in and see his brother.
"I thought you might be able to help me,"
Felix sniffed. There was a strange scent in the room, of spices and the sort of flowers that one usually only smelled at funerals. Felix wondered where it had come from.
"I'll do what I can, of course."
Otto regarded him warily. Ever the merchant, thought Felix, waiting to see what price was going to be asked.
"I need to see a doctor."
Otto's eyes darted from Felix to Elissa and back to Felix again. Felix could almost see the thoughts forming behind his brow.
"You haven't got this girl into trouble, have you?"
Felix laughed for the first time that day.
"No." "Then what's the problem?"
Quickly, Felix told his brother about the man who had died in the streets, about his own symptoms, and the huge queues at the doctor's and the Temple of Shalya. Otto steepled his fingers and listened attentively, occasionally fumbling with the brass pomander, which he lifted to his nose and breathed deeply from. At once, Felix identified the source of the smell in the chamber.
"What's that?" he asked.
"Pomander of wild root and silver spice from far Cathay. The vapours are a sovereign remedy for all airborne fluxes and evil humours. Also, Dr. Drexler assures me. Perhaps you'd like to try it."
He unhooked the chain from around his neck and extended the small perforated sphere to Felix. The smell was very strong. He politely handed it to Elissa. She placed it beneath her nostrils, inhaled deeply, and began to cough.
"It certainly clears the nostrils,"
she gasped, eyes watering. Felix took the pomander and breathed deeply. He immediately understood what Elissa had meant. The vapours cut through the air like a knife. They had a sharp, minty tang, and almost at once a feeling of warmth spread through his head and chest. His nose felt clearer, and his breathing came easier.
"Very good,"
he gasped, returning the device.
"But can you help us see a physician?"
Otto pursed his lips primly.
"Of course, Felix. You are my brother."
"And Elissa?"
"Her too."
It's amazing how money smooths all paths, Felix thought, looking around Dr. Drexler's chambers. Without the use of Otto's name, he doubted the servant would have let him through the doors of the doctor's luxuriously appointed townhouse. Felix had to admit that it was quite a place. On the oak-panelled walls were framed certificates from the universities of Nulm, Altdorf, and Marienburg, as well as handwritten testimonials from maybe half the crowned heads of the empire. A massive portrait of the good doctor, painted by the famous Kleinman, beamed down impressively from the middle of them all. Of course, for the fees that he charged, Drexler could certainly afford the services of the great portrait artist. Felix glanced over the doorway. The doctor and Elissa were in his consulting room. Felix had been left outside for the moment. He rose from the comfortable leather armchair and looked around. Along one wall was a collection of large glass jars, which would not have been out of place in an alchemist's shop. The bookshelves were lined with musty leather-bound tomes. Felix picked one up. It was Johannes Vormann's De Natura Malorum. A first edition, no less. The pages had been cut, which meant that someone around here had read it. It wasn't just window dressing, straight from the bookbinders. Felix examined the other titles and was surprised to discover that only half of them were medical or alchemical in nature. The rest dealt with a variety of subjects, from natural history to the motion of the spheres. It seemed that the doctor was indeed a well-read man.
"You are a scholar, Herr Jaeger?"
Felix turned to find that Drexler had emerged from the consulting room. He was a short, slender man with a narrow, friendly face and a short, well-trimmed beard. He looked more like a successful merchant than a doctor. His robes were as rich as Otto's, and there was not a sign of bloodstains anywhere. Felix could not even see the traditional pot of leeches.
"Well, I've read a little," he admitted.
"That is good. A man should always improve his mind whenever there is an opportunity.
How's Alyssa?" Drexler took off his glasses and breathed on them, then polished them on the hem of his robe. He beamed reassuringly.
"She's fine. She has a summer cold, that is all."
Felix understood why the rich were so willing to pay for the services of this man. There was something hugely reassuring about his quiet, soft-spoken voice and his calm, certain smile.
Not the plague, then?"
"No, not the plague. No buboes, no lesions. No suppurating ulcers of the skin. None of the usual symptoms of any of the greater plagues. Of that, I am sure."
Alyssa emerged from the consulting room. She smiled at Felix. He forced himself to smile back.
"I understand that you were exposed to a plague-bearer yesterday, Herr Jaeger," the doctor said, suddenly all seriousness.
"Yes."
"Best have a look at you, then. Let me see your arm."
For the next few minutes, the doctor performed all manner of arcane rituals, the like of which Felix had never seen. He touched his wrist and counted, while keeping track of a chronometer on the wall. He tapped Felix's chest painfully. He looked into Felix's eyes with a magnifying glass. This was not what Felix had expected. Where were the scalpels and unguents and leeches? Was this man some sort of charlatan? He was certainly most unlike any doctor or barber Felix had ever encountered. His robes were not filthy and crusted with dried blood, for one thing. And the man was tanned, unusually so for a man who spent most of his life indoors. Felix mentioned this fact, and Drexler looked at him sharply.
"I have spent time in Araby," Drexler said. "I studied medicine at the great school at Kar Sabah."
Felix looked at the wall. There was no diploma there from any Arabian university. Drexler obviously understood his train of thought, for he laughed.
"They do not give degrees in Kar Sabah. By the time you leave, you are either a healer or you are not. If you are not, no piece of paper will make you one."
"A fair point. But what did you learn there that you could not learn here in the Empire?" Like all of its citizens, Felix considered the Empire to be the most advanced and enlightened human nation on the face of the planet. He could not conceive that there was anything the Arabians had to teach one of its people. The elves and dwarves, certainly, but not the Arabians.
"Many things, my friend, including the fact that we have no monopoly on wisdom, and that much of what our doctors teach is simply wrong."
"For example?"
"Well, I do not bleed my patients. It does more harm than good."
Felix was at once relieved and shocked. Relieved because, like most people, he dreaded the physician's scalpel. Shocked because the man was obviously a charlatan. Everybody knew that bleeding was essential to release the foul humours in the blood and speed the patient's recovery. And yet, Otto had claimed that this man was the best doctor in Nulm and had cured more people than all the other surgeon barbers put together. Furthermore, Drexler did seem like a profoundly civilized and educated man.
"Do you think I have the plague?"
Felix asked suddenly, surprised at the fear and anticipation that filled him as he waited for Drexler's reply.
"No, Herr Jaeger, I do not. I think you have a slight cold, nothing more. I think most of the people in this city who think they have the plague probably have the same, and I think that the panic such beliefs cause will be more harmful than the plague itself."
"You don't think the plague is real, then?"
"Oh, I certainly believe it's real. I think many people will die from it, as the summer heat comes on and more people come in from the country. But I know you do not have it, nor do any of the wealthy people who come to see me. If you did, you would already be dead or dying. That would make it easy to diagnose, Felix said dryly. Drexler laughed again. I will give you and Fraulein Elissa the same herbal pomanders as I gave your brother and his family. The herbs are a protection against plague emanations, and I have cast a few spells on them as well. You are a magician, as well as a doctor, then. I am a healer, Herr Jaeger, and I use whatever means best to help my patients. I dabble in enchantments of a protective sort. I cannot utterly guarantee their effectiveness, you understand, but they should help if you are exposed to the plague. I thank you for that. Don't thank me, Herr Jaeger. Thank your brother. After all, he's paying my bill. Just as Felix turned to go, he noticed that Drexler was staring at him hard. His face had turned pale and his eyes hard. What is it? Felix asked. The sword you carry. Would you mind telling me where you got it?
Not at all. It belonged to a friend, a Templar of the Fiery Heart named Aldred. He died and I took it, hoping one day to return it to his order.
Might you ask? You were a friend of Aldred's?
We travelled together in the Border Princes. He was on a quest when he died.
I knew Aldred. We were friends for a long time. We studied in the Sigmarite Seminary together. I had not heard word of him in a long time.
Then I am sorry to be the bearer of such bad news to you.
He died well.
He died like a hero.
It is what he would have wanted. I'm sorry to have bothered you with this, Herr Jaeger.
No, I'm sorry to be the bearer of such bad tidings.
He seemed like a very nice man, Elissa said, and so wise, very reassuring.
What did you say?
Felix looked up at her. He was disturbed by the coincidence that Drexler had known the dead Templar, and he felt vaguely guilty about not having made a greater effort to return the blade. Still, it was a very fine weapon, and it had saved his life on more than one occasion.
He said he was very, very assuring.
Very.
Felix looked at her sourly. She'd been singing the doctor's praises all the way back to the blind pig, and her hand had never strayed very far from the herbal pomander. Felix wondered if it was possible that he was jealous. He actually agreed with the woman, but admitting it was difficult for some reason. Elissa seemed to sense this. She looked up at him and smiled teasingly.
Why, Felix, are you jealous?
Why did women seem to have such an uncanny instinct for these things, he wondered, even as he muttered his denials. Gotrek looked up as they entered the tavern. He held a rolled tube in one massive fist. He tossed it straight at Felix.
Catch!
He said. Felix snatched the tube out of the air and recognized it at once for what it was. The parchment was of the same crude weave as the earlier message they had received, the one which had warned them of the Skaven attack on the College of Engineering. He hastily unrolled it,